Working Cows Podcast, episode 211.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. And this episode is brought to you by Performance Livestock Analytics.
How do you manage data for your cattle business? Pen and paper or complicated programs? There's an easier way. Hear how Performance Beef has helped Greg Williams simplify his cattle operation.
Before I switched to Performance Beef, it was an absolute circus. It was a cobbled up pen and paper, didn't know where I was setting, mess. I know on a day in, day out basis what my break even is, how many cattle I've lost, what my feed cost is. On a daily basis, I know I can print that report page and I know exactly where I'm setting that day.
Cattle producers like Greg are saving time and boosting accuracy with Performance Beef. Are you ready to start?
For someone that's on the fence thinking about switching, just pull the trigger. It is a flat-out game changer to know exactly where you're at.
Reduce the guesswork. Search Performance Beef online to request a demo.
So check out workingcows.net/211 for links to Performance Livestock Analytics, Performance Beef, and what they can do for your operation. Really excited to be joined today by Wyatt Donald. Wyatt is one of the people involved in making management decisions at Cayuse Livestock Company near Big Timber, Montana. Very excited to talk to him today about how they are managing a decentralized ranch with a lot of different lease properties and different people coming in on different pieces of that operation throughout different times of the years, and just a very complex system there that they are managing well. So really excited to talk to him about that today. Wyatt, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Clay, for being on your podcast, and then really enjoyed listening to it over the years.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. We were connected by another listener and a guest as well, Ariel Greenwood, and she put us in touch, and you guys have a connection. They come up and take care of some yearlings for you on your ranch. And is it, would you call it central Montana, western Montana? What would you call it?
The south central Montana.
Okay.
Yeah.
South Central Montana. Yep. So is that right? They take care of some yearlings for you guys during the summer?
They do, yeah. Her and her husband, her now husband, Sam Ryerson, have been managing cattle for us on, there's actually two pretty close to each other down there by a small town of Roscoe. And they've been taking care of those cattle for us since 2018. And just really enjoyed working with them. And been a great working relationship with them and friendship.
Yeah, very good. Could you tell me a little bit about your operation, some of the enterprises you guys are involved in, and kind of maybe the different locations where those enterprises get executed?
Yeah, so we're primarily a cow-calf and stocker operation. And we have our home ranch, located near the small town of Melville in central Montana. And we're a family ranching operation. It's a multi-generational, multi-family business supporting five families. And the most of our cows are on our home ranch here in Melville, but we do have a year-round herd of cows on another ranch in eastern Montana. And then a lot of the other ranches that we stock are stocked with our stocker cattle, calves that we buy or raise that are yearling cattle. And those go out on different ranches, southern Montana and northern Wyoming.
And you guys have been using this enterprise mix for quite a while, or is that a, I mean, how long have you been doing the cow-calf and the stocker kind of mix?
Well, so the whole time I was growing up, we raised cows that had a cow-calf, and then retained those calves over until yearlings, and sold the yearlings in September on our home ranch here in Melville. We weren't leasing other ranches at that time, but we're fairly familiar with raising yearlings anyways and managing them. We didn't get into actually purchasing other people's calves and running a kind of a stocker operation until the early 2000s. We started buying, when we started expanding and leasing other ranches, we started buying calves at that point. So it's been within the last 15 years that we've really kind of got into the stocker operation.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but there's been a long time influence of holistic management and that way of thinking. Is that right?
Yeah, there has been. My dad actually attended one of the early savory seminars back in the kind of the mid 80s, I think. Had him kind of thinking about how we're grazing and through that, and he attended a ranching for profit school in the early 90s when Dave Pratt was first, I think, kind of starting to take that over. Mm-hmm. And just did a lot of cross fencing, a lot of water development, and kind of got him to thinking about, I think, you know, that at that time it was getting harder and harder to buy land and production, but I think that kind of opened his eyes that if you can do some cross fencing and water development and get more out of the acres that you currently own, that it's just like buying land, except for much less expense. So yeah, and so that's kind of way we were raised, is with moving camp very frequently, especially through the summer, and just kind of been the way that we've done it ever since. It's evolved, you know, some through the years. Definitely thinking about it that way has been, the grazing has been really important. And then thinking about the business holistically as well. And when my brother and I came back into the business, we really kind of focused on kind of formalizing the business structure and developing organizational charts and coming up with a vision and a mission for our business. And that's really helped through the years.
Yeah. Did I hear you correctly earlier when you said it's supporting five families? Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. There's three families on my generation. It's my brother and his family, and then my wife and her kids. And then we have a cousin and her husband and two boys are on the ranch as well. And then my parents, and then my aunt and uncle. And we also have another cousin that lives with her husband in Idaho. And they're not directly involved in the missions, but are part owners and involved in succession planning discussions and kind of setting the strategic plan for the business. And their kids have been spending the summers up on the ranch this past several years, and that's really been fun getting them involved in the operations.
And that's, I mean, they're voluntarily, I'm not saying that they're in a volunteer capacity, but they're not there against their will, I guess.
No. People against their will, but well, you could ask my kids sometimes and they might tell you different, but no, they're voluntarily coming up. They live with their grandparents in the summer and have just really enjoyed the ranch life, and they do a great job. They're teenagers now, and just kind of become more involved every year, and yeah, they seem to enjoy it.
So as we've chatted a little bit, just kind of getting to know you and your operation. You mentioned that you guys have, you mentioned already in this episode as well, that you've gone through a kind of an expansion phase, you know, in the last
you know, 15, 20 years, whatever. I guess kind of talk to me about the motivations for that. What was pushing you to look at that as an opportunity? I guess we'll start there.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what really started it was my parents and aunt and uncle were always inviting for us to become a part of the business and get us involved. When that desire arose, and so there weren't any, never really felt like we had to really try to figure out how we could get their acceptance as far as coming back and being involved in the business, and so their thought process was is we'll make the business do what it takes to allow for interested family members to come back and be a part of the business. And that's actually in our vision statement. When my brother and his family and myself and, my wife were, we all kind of came back into the business in the early 2000s. It was obviously going to take more cash flow than what the current business was providing. And so we needed to really just sit down and figure out how to make that happen. And both generations were fully on board with that. The older generation was excited that we were excited, and we were excited that we had that opportunity. And so we were ready to kind of roll up our sleeves and figure that out. And so that started with kind of formalizing the business structure, like I talked about, and then just trying to figure out how to create the cash flow to support the families that wanted to be a part of the business. And that's what kind of got us started into looking for ranches to lease. And my wife and I actually moved down to a ranch in northern Wyoming and ran cows down there for several years. That was kind of the first involvement in leasing ranches, and then it just kind of one thing led to another, and we kept finding other places that we could lease and operate, or finding great people to operate cattle or manage our cattle on other places. And through the years, my wife and I ended up moving back to our home ranch, and all of our families actually live on this one ranch now, but we're involved in cattle and lots of other places.
Yeah, so I guess that kind of is interesting to me. Maybe let's kind of go down that path for a minute and talk about the ins and outs of managing that three-legged stool of land, people, and economics in relation to doing it on other ranches. So you come to that place where we've done the numbers, we're kind of being driven towards expansion if we want to maintain this lifestyle with this many families on this operation. We're going to expand. How do you choose the land? How do you find the people? How do you make sure the economics of it works out? I guess we'll start with the land. How do you choose or find land to lease in a scenario like that?
Early on, it seemed like we were really, really on the lookout. We were out actively looking for a ranch that, I guess I should back. We all sat down and kind of thought about and actually wrote down what were the qualifications for a ranch to be, you know, for us to consider. And we kind of had a threshold of, you know, how many cows it needed to run, what sort of cash flow we could get off of it, and, you know, some different things that we were thinking about that it needed. And so with those parameters, we kind of went on the lookout and happened to find that ranch. From then, it's just a lot of it's been word of mouth, our network of people that we've built over the years. My dad and uncle and have a large network of folks that they know. And it just seems like from then on, it was more just kind of looking at opportunities as they arose, and one thing leading to another. And I guess I would like to say we've done a decent job of managing the ranches that we've been entrusted to manage, and I think that's led to some opportunities. And just growing the network of people and meeting other people and meeting people like Sam and Ariel, and it's just kind of grown into what it is now.
Have those ranches come with people on them that you were going to work with, or have you guys had to go out and find people to come in and manage those ranches, or how has that worked?
Well, it's been a little bit of both. A lot of the, some of the ranches that we've started with, were ones that, one of the families was actually managing the cattle on those ranches, either part-time in the summer or living on year round. And then as we've transitioned to living back on the home ranch, we've found people to fill in that management role, as our families have transitioned out of managing those cattle. Other ones were ranches that already had management in place, that were just looking for custom cattle. They were looking for cattle to custom graze, and we have supplied the cattle to those ranches. Couple ranches right now that we stock, we've been stocking for several years, but the folks that are managing those ranches run some of their own cows and then bring our cattle into custom graze, and we work really closely with them, very aligned on management styles and how the ranches are run. We enjoy working with them on those places.
And I don't want to mischaracterize it, I guess, but kind of the way that you laid it out, it kind of sounded like there was a family meeting, so to speak, and there was a discussion or a decision about these are the profit targets that we need to hit. This is our current scale of operation, and we can, you know, count on about this much gross margin per unit, so we need to scale the operation to this size to support these families. Is that an accurate kind of depiction of how it went?
Yeah, that's really accurate. It wasn't just one meeting where we decided it all, but we actually, my brother and I and cousin-in-law at profit school back in 2002, I think, and we were, you know, my dad had already been to the school before, so we were exposed to that, but after going to that school, we joined the Executive Link program, and that kind of helped us get our head wrapped around what it is we thought we needed to do and the steps we needed to take to get there. I feel like that really kind of set us up for the trajectory that we are on now. Mm. And once we kind of got that figured out in our heads, we, just kind of set off to try to achieve that. And that's kind of how we started. So it didn't start with one meeting. It was more of a process than that, but it was a process that happened in the grand scheme of things fairly quickly to get it started anyways, to get that cash flow up to where we be.
As far as, are you guys at a place of this is where we're going to be, or is it frequently changing? I suppose, given the amount of, you know, either land that you guys are sending cattle to be custom grazed on or custom grazing that you're doing yourselves, there's always fluctuation, I would assume.
There is always fluctuation. And then with leasing ranches, there's always transition going on there as well. So some of the ranches that we started with, we no longer have cattle on, and we've picked up new ones over the years, and there's always a little bit of transition going on there. And then the weather, you know, plays a large role in it. And so we We have to be very willing to adjust numbers of, especially the yearlings, to accommodate for, like now, we're in the middle of a fairly severe drought. And considering that on some of the ranches that we stock cattle on, our cattle are the custom grazed cattle. So those yearlings tend to be the first ones that will go in a drought. You know, if the folks that are managing that ranch have cows of their own, you know, that's the herd they kind of want to protect. And so our numbers fluctuate quite a bit because of that. And yeah, sometimes we've got, seems like plenty of grass available for the numbers of cattle that we want to be running. And other times it feels like, we don't, but it's just kind of constantly evolving.
Could you kind of walk me through that economic analysis process of deciding on a new ranch, or how does that look for you guys as far as when there is a need or an opportunity to take on management of a new ranch? How do you decide from an economic perspective that this is something we're going to do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it all starts with looking at the resource base, where the location, the scale of the ranch, the location of the ranch is relative to our other operations. And so ideally, you know, if it's a ranch that can support a full-time family living on it and is in an area that we think that we can graze cows out in a year-round manner, we ideally would like to stock those ranches with cows. Up to a level where we're fairly confident of the grass available to those cows. And then looking at the grass that is produced above that, so the limiting factor would most of the time is winter grass. And so how many cows do we think we can graze through the winter? And then backfilling the rest of the available forage with a class of cattle that's easily moved, and most of the time for us that would be yearlings. And so we would stock use those stock days with yearling cattle grazed in the summer usually. And so there's some ranches where year-round grazing is possible at a scale that makes sense to have somebody managing those cattle year-round. And there are other ranches that is not a possibility, and that kind of determines how we're going to stock the place. And also a lot of it depends on what are the goals of the owner of the ranch and how does that fit in? So that work around that, not around it, I would say work with the owners on that, what their goals are. So that's kind of how we would start it. We've got, you know, gross margin projections of what we think the return for cows would be, provided we can have a good chance of grazing them out year round. And then we've got a idea of the profit that we want to get out of yearlings. And so we just kind of start putting all the pieces together.
So then are you guys involved in developing the grazing plan for those leased ranches where somebody else is managing the cattle?
It kind of depends on the structure of the lease. There's some ranches that we lease that we're leasing it directly from the owner, and we're responsible for developing the grazing plan. And like the ranches that Sam and Ariel manage, we work with Sam and Ariel as far as developing the grazing plan and monitoring that going forward, and adjusting it as we need to throughout the year. Some of the other ones that we have cattle on where our cattle are taken in on kind of a full care basis, the managers of those ranches develop the grazing plan, and they decide, you know, where the cattle are going to be and when to move them and which cattle are going to be where. And we're not directly involved in those discussions, those planning discussions, but are certainly aware of what the situation is, and work closely with those managers as far as stocking rate and how many cattle to bring on and how long we think they're going to be there and adjusting numbers accordingly. So,
yeah. So tell me about the communication piece of that. That sounds pretty critical as far as making sure that you're not surprised when it's time to market some animals because grass isn't going as far as you thought it might or whatever. So could you tell me a little bit about how you guys are managing the communication piece there?
Yeah, that is, the communication is absolutely critical. And then especially in a year like this, where we were having to making some pretty critical decisions even before we turned yearlings out on several of the ranches, and then adjusting grazing plans as we started into them, and adjusting shipping dates and numbers. And I think we're really fortunate right now to be able to work with the folks that are managing our cattle are all really forward thinking. Paying attention to the details. They know cattle, they know grass, and are good communicators. And that makes it a lot easier. Mm. So we don't end up getting into those situations where we get that phone call that says, well, we're out of grass and we need to move these cattle as soon as possible. And that, as dry as it was, that just didn't happen this year. We were in constant communication with those folks, and they were staying on top of it and knowing what the situation was on a daily basis, and were able to communicate that effectively to us. And then I spend quite a bit of time traveling to those ranches as well and talking, looking at it from my own eyes as well.
Sure.
But the communication is, it's critical.
So in the ranching for profit context, we think of a four pillars of a ranching operation. In the holistic management context, they talk about the cows being part of that land pillar, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But could you tell me about the process of acquiring yearlings? If you have an idea what percentage of those yearlings are yours, home raised, and then what percentage come from outside of your herds? Could you tell me just a little bit about that and how those are acquired and some of those things?
Yeah. Well, a lot of it, it depends on how many yearlings we're raising from our own cows, and that depends on how many cows we have on different ranches, and on our own ranch, and then depending on talking with the managers of the ranches that we have cattle on, what the number they're wanting for yearlings, and then just kind of putting that all together. So what is our current inventory of home-raised calves, and how many yearlings does it look like we're going to have grass for next summer, and when do we need to start going out and buying those calves to make up that difference, and can we do that at a profitable level? So we try, we have an idea of about how many we need. So when I start buying calves, I might not know exactly how many calves we need for the next summer, but I know we're going to need some, so we can kind of start contracting some calves early. And one of our risk management strategies for the stocker enterprise is to try to spread the purchase of the calves out over a fairly long period of time, so we're not just exposed to one market. You can be wrong on any given day on any set of cattle, but we can kind of average it over several months. Hopefully we're right more often than we're wrong. And so then as it gets closer to springtime, we start fine-tuning those numbers as far as how many cattle we want on each ranch, and kind of try to just get that number as close to what each ranch wants as possible.
So are you guys bringing in, you know, you said kind of contracting them over a long period of time. Are they all coming in about the same time, though? You just have some of them contracted ahead of time, or do you guys take in balling calves, or are you getting them all pretty much weaned and ready to go to grass?
No, that's pretty spread out. So we'll get in some balling calves, and then, you know, get closer into December, and the first part of the year, we'll start buying weaned calves. And we work with three different grow yards across the state of Montana where we can kind of pool those purchased calves. Depending on where they're purchased from, we'll send them to usually one of those grow yards. We'll take some of those purchased yearlings here at our home ranch as well. And then some of the ranches that we stock in the summer will actually wear some calves for us. Depending on the year, this year it's pretty tough because hay prices are so high. But anyway, so we, that's where we can kind of pool up the cattle. And so we can be placing cattle anytime from starting about now, this time of year, all the way through until it's almost time for turnout at grass. And that really helps. That flexibility helps a lot. And those grow yards do a great job of, taking care of those cattle, you know, depending on whether they're, fresh weaned calves or, weaned calves, they just do a good job of, managing those cattle. And then that communication piece with those folks is just as important as it is with the ranch managers. It's, we stay in close communication with them.
Yeah. So is it a mix then as well of, you know, order buyers and cattle bought in the country and video auction purchases? Is that, are you going to put them together from those three streams, or is it more one than the other?
Pretty much those three streams. Yeah, you pretty well nailed it. I mean, we've got a few order buyers that we work with that we trust and do a good job and have for us for several years. We buy calves direct from ranches that we either know the folks or, you know, bought calves from them several years in a row. And then we'll, contract cattle, calves on the video as well, depending on the year. So yeah, it's those three sources for sure.
Sure. So would you say that those, kind of that enterprise mix is a reflection of your, just regional advantage? I think that, you know, these cattle come, you know, pretty well. I mean, they're in good shape when they get to you. And, you know, I think just this Northern Great Plains region, I think has been recognized by people outside of the region as a pretty good pool of management. And so I think, is that part of a regional advantage, you think, just the ability to do that, to take in yearlings and make money at it? Or is it more mixing it with your management that's making the difference? Or what do you think about that?
Oh, for sure. I think all of that, what you just talked about, is a regional advantage. I think, you know, we have access to a lot of good cattle that are recognized as being cattle that do well. And so having that advantage, and it's very easy to sell yearlings that are purchased from ranches around the Northern Great Plains to any feed yard. Those cattle just work well for them. You know, they're yearlings. They've grown some frame. They know how to eat, and they finish very easily and pretty predictably. That's for sure part of it. And I think the management also plays into it as well, as far as, you know, making sure we're just not boxing ourselves into a corner where we end up having to market cattle that seem to be undervalued at the time. You know, if they're just real thin for whatever reason, or you know, something like that. We try not to let ourselves get into that position.
Sure. Is there a lot of shuffling between ranches, or do cattle that end up in one ranch, are they usually done being managed by your group when they leave there, or are they sometimes going from one stage to the next in your, you know, in kind of the distributed ranches that you guys are managing?
There's not a lot of shuffling between ranches, with the exception of like our cows. We will take cows from here in Melville and maybe send them to like that ranch in eastern Montana to replace that herd down there. And so we calve all of the heifers here in Melville most of the time anyways. And so we might take, you know, coming 3-year-olds down to that Antelope Springs ranch for replacements for that place on any given year. So there's a little shuffling as far as that goes. And then there's a lot of shuffling between the grows and the ranches, especially in, you know, in the springtime when we're getting ready to turn those yearlings out on grass. Those cattle go from the grow yards out to the various ranches. And then generally the yearlings, once they're done grazing on the ranches in the summer, are, shipped to a feedlot. We sell them off grass and they end up going to a feedlot. They rarely come back to another ranch.
Would you say that there are other regional advantages that you guys are taking advantage of, or anything else that comes to mind in that regard?
The native range, the grass up here is great. And especially our ranch here in Melville, live in an area where it's pretty achievable to be able to graze out year round and for those cows to, do well under that management style. They can graze throughout the entire winter with a little bit of a protein supplement and maintain a pretty good level of body condition. And I the more I'm around, the more I realize how much, how hard that is to do, even if you are in a place that maybe isn't covered up in snow year round, but just the quality of the grass is so different. And so, I think that's a big advantage for us to be able to down for the cows, and try to raise a calf, maybe cheaper than it can be raised in a lot of other places.
What are some of the grasses that make that a possibility for you guys?
Oh, just a lot of the wheat grasses, you know, western wheat, some blue grasses, prairie chicken grass. No range specialist by any stretch of the imagination, know that whatever mix we've got going on here seems to be a pretty good one, and it seems to work well for the cows that we have.
And what are some of the keys to making that work, do you think?
As far as the keys for making grazing cows work?
Yep.
Well, I think having cows that are used to that management style certainly helps. Mm. We've purchased cows in the past that maybe weren't used to that, and the fallout can be fairly steep the first couple of years. So I think having the right cows, and then, you know, developing a grazing plan where you've got a pretty good idea going into the winter that the stock days are available, for a winter's worth of grazing. And, you know, I think this year might be a little bit of an exception where we know we're kind of short on grass, and we're going to do a combination of adjusting our cow numbers, but also probably going to be feeding those more hay than we are used to. So I think, yeah, developing that grazing plan. And then some of it takes a little bit of discipline when you get into the middle of winter. You know, that it's got a neighbor that does similar grazing to what we do. And we were talking about it one time, and he said, you know, it's a lot of times it's easier to feed your cows than it is to not feed your cows. And I think what he meant by that was that there could be some days where it looks kind of rough, and you just want to be like, well, we should feed them today just because it would help them out. But if every time the snow flies, you know, that hay is going to be there, then it makes it pretty tough to keep them out there foraging.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get into a major storm situation where the snow is iced down, right. We'll feed when we need to, but we try to not feed if we don't really have to.
Yeah. A couple of things on that. Bob Howard said on episode 27, the Working Cows podcast, those cows aren't standing by the gate waiting for somebody to come check on them because they know nobody's coming.
Yeah, there's a little truth to that.
And then the other one was, I grew up here in Western South Dakota, and whenever somebody would ask me, you know, what my favorite kind of weather was, I would always say rain, and I'd follow it up by saying my least favorite is wind, because I had a lot of one and not much of the other growing up. By the same token, I've also had a little bit of a paradigm shift, as we've had more days over 100 degrees than I can remember in a long time. And as I've been working out in it, some of those days, that wind was a saving grace for sure. And the other thing is, I've heard a lot of people since I've started kind of having my mind changed as what's possible as far as ranching and cows and their ability to work for their own, you know, their own keeping their own way or making their own way, is that the wind can be a regional advantage in the northern plains because it blows the snow away sometimes and lets them get back to grazing.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's one of the things that really makes it possible for us here is the wind. We'll get some snow sometimes, but usually within a week we'll get a pretty good wind event that at least blows the ridges clean, or thins it off enough to where those cows can forage through it. And we live in a pretty windy area, and it's easy to cuss the wind a lot, but there's a lot of times it does us a lot of good.
What about calving season and cow frame size and some of those things? Do you guys, as you seem to probably have somewhat of a fluid herd, do you look at those things? Do you pay attention to those things when you're purchasing cattle, when you're thinking about, you know, making your plan for the year? Are those things major considerations as far as being able to graze through the winter, or do they not, or is there something else that's higher on the food chain as far as decision making?
Oh, that's a major consideration for sure. And my brother kind of handled most of the genetic selection for a cow-calf enterprise. And he thinks a lot about that and what's, you know, this balancing cow that's easy fleshing and can do well on relatively low inputs with balancing that with a product that we can sell, which is feeder cattle. So we need cattle that obviously put on that flesh, but also have some pounds to sell. And sometimes those aren't always the same thing. You kind of have to balance one thing with another. And the cow size, you know, we've really, I think, been aiming for a moderate frame size on our cows, but maybe not chasing the smaller frame cattle as much as maybe some others. You know, one of the things that we've really looked at is this cow depreciation idea. And one of the things that gets entered into the cow depreciation is, what is the salvage value? And obviously bigger cows have more salvage value just because of the fact that they weigh more. That doesn't mean that we're striving for 1800 pound cows, but it might not mean that we're striving for 1000 pound cows either. you know, if we've got some cows that have more salvage value, that those cull cows can add to our bottom line quite a bit.
Sure.
So that those are all things that are considered when we're kind of deciding what type of cattle we should be running. And when we're buying bulls, we're looking at very different traits than when I'm looking at buying calves to run through our stocker program. We're not quite as focused on the same things. We'll buy lots of different kinds of calves for the stocker operation that we would not necessarily want at all in a cow herd, but they work pretty well as yearlings.
Yeah, just too much demand as far as forage intake. Is that what you're talking about to make it into the cow herd, but will work well for a yearling?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when we're looking to run into our stocker operation, we'll buy calves that, color doesn't really matter. And, I think about 75% of them end up being black just because of the cattle we have available to us, I think, but, don't mind some continental influence that maybe has a little more frame to them. And might be a little, harder doing cow, but as far as a yearling goes, they do well. And the, folks that we sell them to, they feed well for them. So they're just two completely different enterprises that have, different goals, I guess. And we have to be aware of that when we're looking at purchasing those cattle.
Sure. It'd be interesting to find out if you took a string and drew a circle around Melville, Montana, 500 miles in every direction, if 75% of those cows are probably black, black-eyed cattle anyways, I would guess, but pretty close to it anyways.
Yeah, I think it's pretty representative of what cattle are around, for sure.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate your time today. Don't want to take up too much of your time this afternoon, but I appreciate you giving me some time to just pick your brain and understand a little bit about what you guys have going on there. Are there any other major nuggets that you wanted to touch on this afternoon?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I think we covered a lot of it. Really appreciate just being involved in an industry and the folks that we work with, and the people part of it is just getting an opportunity to talk with folks like you and the folks that manage cattle, our cattle on ranches. Just enjoy working with those people and being involved in it, that's really satisfying to do that.
Yeah. No, it is very good. And I think it's interesting what you said about just finding that, amount of forward thinking. And I guess when I hear that word, the thing that comes to mind is proactive management rather than reactive management. Finding that number of people that you can send cows out to and send yearlings out to and have that kind of management happening, is that's a pretty neat thing.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate to have been able to be able to work with those folks. And yeah, I think the proactive versus reactive management is really, really important part.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts of what you had to say was the we set the grazing on what can we do on this ranch year round, and then we match the forage supply by bringing in outside cattle for some of those higher forage producing months. I think that's a that's a way underrepresented in the industry today, and I think that's a big part of the reason why the industry, in a lot of respects, struggles, is because people are trying to run as many cows as possible, and then that ends. That means there's going to be a lot more feed brought in from outside the ranch to get those cows through the winter.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a lot harder to adjust numbers of cows quickly than it is adjusting the numbers of yearlings. You know, the yearlings are so easy to market just about any time of the year, and there's a lot of times during the year where it's not very easy to market your cows. And if I mean, you can always sell them, but you can't always get the value out of them that you might need. And so, yeah, I think having a pretty conservative approach to numbers of cows is a pretty good idea, and especially gives you a lot of flexibility in years like this.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's very good. Well, Wyatt, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Clay. Sure enjoyed it, and really enjoy listening to your podcast.
Hat tip to Arielle Greenwood for putting us in touch. Really appreciate her getting us connected. Looking forward to continuing this big timber Montana theme. We're going to talk next week to Betsy and Roger Indreland from Indreland Angus. We're going to talk to them about their soil health journey. So we'll see you again real soon with another episode of the Working Cows Podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.